Johnson. Well done, Manchester United. Beckham.
Into Sheringham. And Solskjaer has done it! Van der Sar saved it! United again! Rooney!
Welcome to United Hour, your official Red Cafe podcast for all things Manchester United. I'm your host, Nick.
I'm Colin.
I'm Reese.
Yeah, we've got the same trio back that we had a couple of weeks ago. It's not been a great few weeks, but we're going to have to look back at where we're at. Yeah, so if we just remember back, we recorded just before the Arsenal game. I think you two actually got the prediction bang on because you both predicted a draw. I was slightly more hopeful, hoping we might nick a 1-0. And to be fair, we actually gifted them the goal. So yeah, it could have been 1-0 with a slightly better defending. But yeah, anyway, we then had obviously a pretty poor game out in Alkmaar against AZ in the Europa, but yeah, with a much rotated team. And then the game that's really sent all the tabloids, everybody into full Man U crisis overload, was losing out at St. James's Park to a pretty average Newcastle team, really. And, you know, over the years, Steve Bruce has always been a pretty good manager for us, like normally always won wherever he's been, whether it's Wigan, Sunderland, whatever, 3 points. But yeah, this time he's decided to stick the knife in, and it wasn't a good day at all. But yeah, so it's not going to be the most positive of podcasts, I don't think, but we'll try and find some silver linings where we can. I mean, look, what's your current feeling, Colm, and everything? As I said, I know you were not feeling particularly confident a few weeks ago, and are you worse now? Same place? Where are you at?
Probably the same place, or slightly better, because there's only so long. It's weird, like you watch the game, you get so, or at least I get so angry and so upset for a few hours, maybe a day. And then after that, I kind of come back to a more rational base point where I'm maybe not quite as reactionary about all the things I see. But then you kind of just come into ambivalence and it's just like, oh, well, this is just it now. You know, this is just the way we're going to play, probably at least until January. And we have this kind of vague hope of something changing in January with one or two 33-year-olds or whatever coming in, but and the likelihood is that won't really change things, or Martial and Pogba coming back and that'll be a big lift or whatever. But we're kind of just looking for that now, because at the moment I think if we're just playing with this squad for the next few weeks still, it's just gonna be more of the same. And it has been for me, so like we've been so consistent this year, consistently bad but so consistent. You know, it's always 1-0 or nil, you know, just not scoring and then conceding late in the second half and stuff like that. And it's just a trudge at the moment, you know?
I mean, I don't totally agree that it's been consistently bad the whole season. And I've actually got a lot more worried, like, in the last few weeks. You know, I still say early on in the season, I thought we were unlucky, that we were still creating chances. You know, obviously we've got an issue with finishing off chances, that's for sure. But we were still creating pretty good chances. But now in the last couple of matches, that seemed to disappear as well. Like, you know, and just not hardly...
I just don't see that chance creation. I know we kind of explored that previously on the XG episode and stuff like that. And when we were getting those penalties and things like that. And this, I mean, it's essentially the same disagreement. I still don't think we're creating or have at any stage during the season. As soon as you take the Chelsea game out of it, I don't think we've created good quality, clean cut chances against the teams, you know, the caliber of teams we've been playing against and the caliber of players we have on the pitch. I don't think it's reflective of good chances at all, I have to say. I think we have a serious, serious creativity issue, and it's our number one problem.
Yeah, look, we do definitely have a creativity issue, and it's obviously exacerbated as soon as Pogba's out. Like, you know, it's been even way back into Mourinho times that we knew he was like 90% of our creativity was him. And when he's not there, like you see exactly what we're missing. But I still maintain that in those early matches, whether it was Palace, Wolves, Southampton, that we made enough chances to win those games. Whereas, you know, against Newcastle, we just didn't. West Ham, like not much.
Oh, I think like West Ham, we were conclusively played, you know, like battered essentially. I think in that game.
Yeah. We do disagree on that, but I think, yeah, we can at least agree that these last few have been pretty awful. I mean, Reese, where do you fall on that? Like, I see that things have actually gone downhill, whereas Colm just thinks we've been on a kind of constant, just average all season.
I've probably more along the lines of Combe, but I do see where you're coming from as well, in the sense that we were sort of mediocre and average, and now we're abysmal. So I definitely see a decline. The game that Combs picked out, in, especially, I think the Chelsea game epitomises a lot what was wrong with Manchester United. Now, the scoreline flattered us with the 4-0, but if you actually looked at the balance of play, I thought Chelsea were pretty much dominating us for the most part of 60 minutes until we sort of out of nowhere got that second goal, and then they just collapsed after that. But both sides are a really interesting contrast for this season, in the sense that Lampard's actually instilled a pattern of play which you can see pretty much game in, game out. Results haven't gone his way in the beginning of the season because defensively they were shocking, whereas we seem to be pulling results out of the bag. But if you're looking at the actual patterns of play, there was no real cohesiveness going forwards. For defensively, we were kind of okay, but going forwards, there was no real patterns of play. But what we did have was individuals pulling out moments of quality. But even that's disappeared in the past three games, where even the individuals that do generally get us out of situations. I mean, I'm not a fan of Rashford, but he does sometimes get you out of a situation. But he's been abysmal. I think Pogba's been... like, he doesn't want to be there. So,
well, Pogba's been missing mostly, to be fair. I mean, he was there for the Arsenal match.
You think he was missing before he was injured, but yeah, take your point.
Yeah, I'm just saying, generally speaking, we've been relying on individuals to get us out of situations, and even that doesn't seem to be there at the moment. So, yeah, I definitely do sense a bit of a decline in the level of performance recently.
Yeah, no, like I say, I am a lot more worried now, and if... We can touch on the XG, since it's something we have been looking at. I mean, that Arsenal game, we should is actually the first time that XG says we should have lost the match. Interestingly, like 1.13 for us versus 1.7 for Arsenal. So yeah, I mean, it's not a big difference, but it is the first time this season that XG says they had better chances than we did. I mean, I watched this game with a lot of Arsenal fans in a London pub. It was like probably 50-50, quite a big atmosphere of two teams hoping for better things. And yeah, I felt relatively happy on the day, just obviously annoyed that we kind of gifted them a goal. I mean, they had a couple of other chances, but I wouldn't say that much. But yeah, I felt that maybe it was at least battling performance that we could build on. But yeah, it didn't really happen. I mean, yeah, what was your assessment from that one, Rhys?
I thought both teams just looked really poor. I mean, us United fans, we're expecting the fact that our team's not really at the races, and there's a lot of negative talk amongst the fan base. But with Arsenal, there should have been some optimism with the amount of money they have spent going into this season. But Pepe, for me, I mean, I'll be honest with you, watching him in France, I didn't think he would be a successful signing, especially at 70 million. He's someone that needs a lot of work, and you could see he's very raw. He's quite clumsy sometimes with the ball. So I think from an Arsenal perspective, they'd have been disappointed. From our perspective, there were some positives. I thought Tanzebe, apart from his error, looked imperious again, because we talked in our last podcast and I said that he's got so much talent, but he just needs to believe in himself. But that performance was one of those where he showed a lot of aura and confidence on the ball, which funnily enough, he did. He overplayed it and led to an error for their equaliser. But on the whole, there were so many positives to take from his performance in particular.
Yeah, I thought, funnily enough, the Arsenal game was actually probably the one I would accept as a decent effort, I suppose. I thought we relatively controlled the game. I know they maybe had the 1.7 XG or whatever, so created slightly better chances than us. But broadly, when I was watching it, I felt, you know what, we've looked the team more in control, I would say, but just lacked any creation. You know, I think a lot of players that put in the shift and we put in a good, like, kind of tactical plan against them and dominated the ball relatively well, but there was just no creation whatsoever. And to then give away a cheap goal, I really didn't blame. I mean, it is obviously almost entirely Tanzebe's fault, but he was fantastic. I thought he was very good. Great to see him play at centre back, because I'm not sure if it was Newcastle. Was it Newcastle where he got flipped out to right back when?
He started and then got changed out.
That was a bit disappointing. But in Arsenal, he played the full 90. At centre back, looked fantastic, and he's a bit of a shining light at the moment. Well, the whole defence doesn't look too bad, but he's particularly one that you can see really growing into the season and maybe even taking over Victor Lindelof's spot. But if that Arsenal game was like in isolation, say, and it was a 1-1 where maybe they got a cheap goal at the end, you could probably accept that. You know, if we go away to AZ, smash them, smash Newcastle, if we had to beat Rochdale and West Ham, you know, that result in isolation would be absolutely fine. I wouldn't have an issue with it, but it's just so similar and so poor, as have all our performances been for the last sort of 3 months, you know. Didn't score against Newcastle, didn't score against AZ, scored one against Arsenal, scored one against Rochdale, scored none against West Ham, scored one against Astana, scored one against
Leicester. Yeah, we've actually only scored, you know, it was only the opening day of the season where
we scored one against Southampton, scored one against Palace, scored one against Wolves. You know, it's just that's so patently the problem. And, you know, to me, it is a poor squad. It's not one goal a game per, and it's not one goal against Rochdale per, you know, it's not that bad a squad. So at that point, I do come and look at the manager and look at the coaching, because as I'm sure we'll get on to, you know, Ed Woodward doesn't coach them how to score goals. Do you know what I mean? That's not his fault for the players that are there. Now, yes, we can all go, why the hell didn't we buy Bruno, you know, or whoever else was available, but you still at some point have to work with what you're given. And at the moment, for me, that's just so, so, so disappointed, because there isn't even a semblance of a plan. You know, we're just drifting through games, hoping goals happen. And that is I just can't handle it at the moment, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if we look over then to like Newcastle, as I say, again, if we pick out the XG accordingly, we should have won this game, but only, in fact, XG probably suggests it should have been 0-0, 0.65 for Newcastle, 0.9 for us. So yeah, really neither team's creating that much. Well, I think we had something like 70% of the possession.
Yeah.
But there was, apart from Maguire missing a sitter, there wasn't really much else you really picked out as chances we really had clear cut.
And that was an absolute sitter, but again, and I know we've had this XG argument, but that Newcastle goal for me is such a, it like embodies that argument I was making about XG, and I appreciate it probably should have been a 0-0, and yet when we came out for the second half, really slow, really lethargic, when we hadn't created chances, and then when Newcastle started to build in, pen us back and get us on the counter a wee bit, and then the ball gets rolled to, you know, a 18-year-old or whatever it is, making his first start or whatever it was, playing with his brother in centre field, and he crisply, you know, pops it into the bottom left. It's not a goal that happens all the time, but, and it's, you know, technically speaking, maybe they shouldn't have had that goal, and yet everyone watching it, every United fan watching it was no surprise to anyone, I'm absolutely sure, you know, because you just knew it, you just felt that the team was receding, we weren't taking any chances, we weren't creating any chances, and then there comes the sucker punch, which is so indicative of how this season has been. And that's why I sort of think that XG, maybe we're the kind of exception to the rule at the moment, because we're just such a out of sorts team that even the XG doesn't really make a whole pile of sense, because we just don't capitalise on the possession. We don't even capitalise on the chance that we create. And, you know, Dan James has many, many crosses that no one's ever going to get at the end of. Rashford looking like an absolute desolate man up front, needs an extended break from the team, you know, but we just can't give it to him. And the Newcastle game was just, it was a tough one, big time.
Yeah, and I will say as well, like, from my perspective, as I say, I do think we were creating more, even though I know you don't agree, earlier in the season. And yeah, I mean, XG is saying that, because against both Newcastle and Arsenal, we're around one. So they basically say we're not deserving any more than one goal, whereas earlier in the season, we're suggesting we should have been getting two, even three goals in matches, but just weren't finishing them off. But yeah, like I say, that is the big worry for me, that like I do see an actual regression, less creativity, and then we know that we're struggling to finish chances. I mean, we do have to talk about injuries. Ole keeps saying, I don't want to talk about it. But especially that Newcastle game, I mean, essentially you're talking about probably, what, five of our first 11 are playing in that match, which is pretty crazy. But you do, you know, we've had these situations before. You know, I remember under Van Gaal when a load of kids were thrown in and everything from nowhere. But things, it's not helping, that's for sure. I mean, how much is on the injuries and how much is just on the team in general? I mean, what do you think, Colm? How much can you put down to blaming to the injury situation?
I mean, I don't like to absolve, because it's just something you can't control, so you can only really work with the situation you're in. Now, if Martial's played the entire season and Pogba's played the entire season and Shaw and Wan-Bissaka have played the entire season, I think we're doing a lot better than what we are. Don't get me wrong. I think we probably win. I think we do a lot better against West Ham. I think we probably beat Southampton. I think a lot of those goals, games where we've scored none or one, I think we scored maybe two or three. And of course, they're going to make a difference. Of course they are. Particularly, I think, you know, Martial and Pogba, obviously the big ones in the fullbacks. But it's almost like, well, so what? You know, they are injured. Now, is that because of the pre-season running and all that kind of stuff? You know, is it just bad luck? Whatever it is, you know. But ultimately, to me, it doesn't matter because you've gone into the season with this squad, and yes, it's been a thin squad, and that's what Ole wanted. He wanted to get rid of people. He wanted to work with a small squad to kind of really assess things and let people have, you know, their chance. Your Pereiras, your younger players, you know, Martial and Rashford, which one's a number nine? And you have to let these players play and give them that chance, which we were all happy for at the start of the season, and that's fine. But then you can't, on the other hand, go, well, you know, but as soon as we get those players back, you know, our injuries have been the main problem, this, that, and the other. To me, it definitely is a problem. Of course it is. It's very unfortunate. Of course it is. I'm absolutely convinced we would have done better with those players. But that said, every single man in that squad is a Manchester United player. And the only ones I would really absolve are the boys that have been brought through from the under-23s, the youth setup, you know, because the rest of them have, you know, a lot of senior minutes. A lot of them are internationals. A lot of them have played in other leagues and you know, they should be doing better, or they just shouldn't be at the club. And they should be being coached better and sent out with a plan and with a bit of inspiration and with a bit of desire to actually do well. Because a lot of the times in these matches, I haven't seen any of that. You know, we're not asking for them to, you know, play champagne football. Like, you know, we're asking them to beat, you know, Rochdale. Like, it's not, you know, it shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, Rochdale and stuff, though, you know, it is cup games with rotated teams. For me, the bigger worries, of course, the league matches. But yeah, you're right. Even though when we have Astanas and Rochdales and struggling in those matches, it doesn't help the general confidence and mentality of the team. And you know, even Ole kind of made a comment against after Newcastle that maybe there is something now mentally wrong with the kind of run we've been going on. I do agree that especially Pogba and Martial. I said it on the last pod, like, arguably our two most important players for like creativity and scoring goals, to have both of them out for like most of the season now so far has obviously like murdered us when we're quite clearly light in both of those areas. Yeah, still, you're right, we do expect more from the players that are there, but you know, picking out the ones who've been the big disappointments is obviously like Lingard, Mata, not seeing still enough from Pereira. Nope. Although I would actually say that I think he's been playing slightly better, but still from a kind of very average base earlier than that. I do think we've seen a little bit more from him at least in the last month or so, but still nowhere near enough to be enough starter.
The thing about Pereira is he will always have a go and take things on, and he can deliver a good ball and stuff like that. So across 90 minutes, he will give you those nice little flashes, and credit to him, like, he's putting the work in. Is he good enough to be a Manchester United starter? Or a Premier League starter? I think probably not.
Yeah, I think we're probably, I assume, Reese, you're probably on around the same agreement over there as well on Pereira, are you?
Yeah, definitely. I think with Pereira, his big issue is his lack of physical dynamism. That's what's held him back. I think skill level-wise, I mean, we all saw him coming through reserves, academy, super skillful player, but unlike someone like Coutinho, who, even though Coutinho is the same size as him, Coutinho is slightly more zippy around the pitch, and that makes all the difference. Pereira just can't cover ground quick enough. And unless you're as good as someone like Toni Kroos, who can make it work for him, Pereira ends up becoming a bit of a liability. He just can't move quick enough to do what his brain actually wants to do. And then the rest of his technical quality is good, but his brain just isn't wow enough to cover for his physical deficiencies. And that's why he's never going to be a first-team player at Manchester United in the long term.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing. You know, somebody like Pereira, if he's playing 10, 15 matches in the year, it's probably okay. But if he's starting every
week... Coming on at 70th minute, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That is the problem. But as I said, yeah, I do actually think we've seen a little bit more from him in the last few weeks, but still nowhere near enough. But yeah, the big disappointments have obviously been Mata, Lingard, who's way, way off form, even injured now anyway. And then, yeah, we see where we go from there. But now the big question, we mentioned it last pod because it started being kind of rumblings of Ole out and whatever. But yeah, if we look at Red Cafe, there's been a big swing in the kind of poll on there that I think around the time of the Arsenal game, I think 60, maybe 61% or something were saying, yeah, stick with Ole. Whereas around 40% were saying to have him out. That's now swung all the way to 55%. So a majority wanting him out and 45% staying to stick with him. I mean, I'm still very much saying it'd be absolutely crazy to like fire him at this point, just because it's not going to solve our problems. Obviously had, you know, so many injuries. If he'd had like the full first 11 out, we'd had these kind of performances and results we've had, then yeah, it'd be a whole different scenario. But it's also just like, you know, who's actually going to come in now after you've been through like four managers. I just don't see the point in it at this point in the season, really. I mean, where are you two guys at on this, Colm?
Well, the only thing I would say is, and I'm not Ole out, but if he was sacked tomorrow, it wouldn't devastate me. Do you know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. And I do empathise with people who are willing to put their cards on the table and say, you know, I want him gone. I don't think he's good enough. And I think me and Reese will probably agree on this. I don't see him as a long-term fixture at this club. Unless there's a really big change. And maybe I'm being too quick in that judgment, because he could get, you know, players in January and players next year. If Ed and the Glazers were to invest $200-300 million in, you know, attacking options for him and a centre midfielder, then next year we could have a pretty solid back line, hopefully an improved midfield, hopefully an improved attack, and it could look completely different. And Ole could then, you know, maybe get a bit of a run going, and we might see more. But I'm a firm believer that top quality managers earn their money when things aren't going well, and I am not impressed by Ole when things are not going well, and this dates back to last season. And I know we're always talking about this season now because we've kind of moved on, but for me, I really can't shake that sort of run after the 10-game bounce and after PSG. I just can't really get that out of my head in any way. And I know we've talked about it and the mitigating circumstances and things left to play for and stuff, but we had top four for us, and we absolutely popped it, you know. And I appreciate it wasn't his squad, and I do appreciate the work he's done in the summer. I really, really do. But I just don't see him as a long-term fit and as necessarily having the personality and the motivation and the skills required to be a really top-level manager like Klopp, like Guardiola, like Pochettino, even though he's struggling at the moment, which is what I think we should be aiming for very clearly. That said, I don't see what sacking him this week solves. I don't see what sacking him this year solves, unless it's really, really, really still very bad at Christmas. Is probably the only time I would really begin to consider it. I think, you know, if the results just kept going this way and players just kept getting injured, which I also think sometimes is a bit of an indication that things aren't very good at the club, and without wanting to absolve the players, I do not, because they've been terrible under four or five managers now, and I really think we kind of lose sight of that, and we want to put everything on the manager as opposed to looking at the team and looking at the board and the club structure, which isn't right at all. But the manager's the easy fix and the easy change. I do look around and think, when I'm watching these matches, I think, is there another manager out there that would deliver this same performance? Is there another manager out there with this squad, with these injuries, could deliver better? And I think there probably is, you know. And in that sense, you know, why should we wait? But I think for a bit of continuity and to give him a bit of backing, it would have to go so bad between now and Christmas for me to really start thinking that it was good to do mid-season, because no good manager wants to come into that situation anyway. You know, who are you going to get? You know, Allegri, whoever it is. You know, I just think it's short-sighted, to be honest, and I think it puts too much on Ole and not enough on the players and not enough on the structure of the club and the people around Ole, you know. But I'm certainly not worried by him, which that might have come across there. I don't see how, even with all the problems at the club, how the run of form we've been on this season and last can be acceptable for a Manchester United manager. I really struggle with that at the moment.
I think that's one of the big differences, like, depends on which perspective you take. Like, for me, I kind of write off last season and say this is a fresh start. And like, for me, then, that, you know, a lot of players left. I mean, not enough players came in. You know, going into the season, before Sanchez and Lukaku left, I said, yeah, look, I'm okay with the squad, but yeah, we're missing one midfielder. They then left, and you say, yeah, well, all right, now we're really light up front. And I think, I remember we had some kind of chat on WhatsApp, and I was saying, listen, I would take, whether it's Llorente or whoever, just to bring in another option, because we get one or two injuries, we're going to be struggling. And yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. And yeah, for me, I just think it's a bit sad that if he was got rid of already, that he's not really been given a chance for me to actually make a success of it. I mean, I'd say it needs to be, and you know, that winter window is so difficult. So even realistically, it's like another two windows before you can say he's anywhere close to actually having a squad that you can say, all right, this is my squad and now judge me on it. You know, what do you think about that, Reese? You think Ole needs...
I disagree with that sentiment. I think that's what's got us united into all the trouble so far, is over prolonging keeping these managers on when they're clearly out their depth. I think he's had more than enough time to prove himself. I agree with Colm. I thought, based on his performances in last season, I didn't think he deserved to be appointed in the first place because he just wasn't showing enough tactical nous and know-how after the initial run, which was built on enthusiasm and the fact that Mourinho had finally done one. He was riding the curtails of that. And then once that enthusiasm disappeared, there was nothing really behind it in terms of substance. And then, fine, okay, he's been appointed. I thought, all right, fine, I'll support him. But honestly, he's completely out of his depth. He looks bewildered every time he's giving a press conference. I would honestly, if this was in isolation and it wasn't based on the fact that we've already sacked three managers already, he'd go, in my opinion. Now, the question is, yes, fine, he deserves to go. But then who do you appoint? Now, I'm against Allegri being appointed. I think it'll lead to the same issues. Mm-hmm. Allegri is, yes, tactically way more sophisticated than Ole, but he's not a modern-day coach that we need. We need to replicate what City are doing, what Liverpool are doing, what Chelsea are doing under Lampard. Allegri's not going to be that manager, so it's going to lead to the same old problems. So, yeah, okay, if you're going to get rid of Ole, who are you going to bring in? And right now, I think most of the people that we would want to bring in are already employed by better clubs than us, to be honest with you. Poch is probably the one who's looking quite shaky. He probably wants to leave Spurs. So we should probably time it and get him in instead. Now, I'm not a huge Poch fan in the sense that I don't think he's a massive winner, but is he a good coach who improves players' bottom levels, and does he improve their fitness levels? Does he have a half-decent modern tactical system of play? Yes, he does. So for the transitional period, he's probably the best guy you're going to get in right now. So that's my opinion. Hold off until you know he's available.
Yeah, it is interesting actually to compare, because I know it was a big discussion throughout parts of last year between like Ole and Pochettino. And I mean, yeah, I've always been a big fan of Pochettino. He was my number one choice when we went for Mourinho. I never wanted Mourinho. And even, yeah, back then I wanted him. And since then, his stock's even gone higher. I think, you know, the real scenario for everybody probably should have been that Ole was caretaker, was given that kind of time till the end of the season, and then probably, yeah, Pochettino takes Spurs to Champions League final, says, I've done what I can do here, and moved to Manchester United. That probably would have been everybody's scenario, but it's not gone that way for various reasons. You know, even though I don't say it's a mistake that they gave Solskjaer the job, because at that time, the high everybody was
the time,
on.
I know, but I think it was.
Yeah, but you know, at that time, that you know, I remember like Ferdinand's dancing around on the TV going, yeah, he's got to get the job, and you know, whatever.
But that's unfair as well. And you can't, you know, you can't move on Sky Sports or BT or whoever else and not have ex United players, you know, throwing their tuppence in. And I think they get a lot of credence when necessarily, I don't know what they've done to earn it other than play Manchester United, which is all well and good, but doesn't mean you know a whole pile about football. Or even, I mean, maybe that's a bit harsh, but it just seems like they always have these people they can wheel in to have an opinion, and it seems like we sometimes put a lot of stock in those opinions that don't necessarily is the best thing for a massive football club. But the only thing about the timing of the Ole thing, there was never any harm in just waiting. You know, Ole wasn't putting any pressure on it. He was asked about it in press conferences and you know, post-match and all that. And he just said, look, I'm doing my job. I'm very happy. I'm working with the boys. No problem. And I think at the time there was a lot of kind of chat about Pogba wanting to move on and stuff like that. And it was kind of thought that this might, you know, be a good move to get like, you know, some, you know, continued in place and make sure we know what we're doing and kind of ride this wave and get the absolute most out of it and say, look.
Yeah, and it wasn't just Pogba either. There was even, you know, De Gea,
yeah,
Pogba,
of course.
There was, you know, different situations. And I do understand, like, but I still wouldn't say it was a mistake. I kind of understand why it was done. In hindsight, you might say, all right, they rushed into it. But, you know, everything was on such a high. The fans were, like, feeling much better than they'd been for years. Everybody was like, the United way's back. So I can kind of understand why they said, all right, listen, let's give him the job. Let's start planning going forward. Like, yeah, look, in hindsight, maybe they should have done things differently. But anyway, look, now Ole was giving it. And if we look, like I say,
the only thing they really should have done was give him more money in the summer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that is where it's all falling apart now, really. And, you know, that's what we really need to talk about is the whole structure, the systems, you know, Woodward, Glazer. There's a lot of discussions about these kind of things. And, you know, Woodward for me now has been like the constant in years and years of failure. And he really has to go. I can't see how he's still staying in this job, even though maybe the financial situation is okay. But that's, for me, is the biggest problem. And when that was the thing that I did actually get excited about, was when Mourinho went, the club started talking about a change of structure. They said, we're going to get a whether it's director of football, technical, whatever it is. But that doesn't really seem to have happened. I think, I can't remember, it was one of you two on the last pod said, actually, maybe Ole would be a really good director of football, because if we look at him starting this like rebuild, that the three players who came in this summer are looking good. You know, he's starting to bring back in Tuan Zebi, Greenwood, who I think are ready to be playing pretty regular first team football. Not so sure about maybe Chong's and that over there. But yeah, I think there is a basis for something going forward. Whether he's the right coach and all as well, I'm not 100% sure. We should also not forget that there is a whole coaching team there, you know, when they first came through.
And a young coaching team and an experienced coaching
team.
Yeah,
but, you know, people like, all right, Mike Phelan is there. Yeah. I know Carrick and McKenna, and they were quite, you know, we got quite excited about this whole kind of, just saying it wasn't just Ole, it was a whole team that was going to come in, and people who all knew the club from like years, especially Carrick. Phelan obviously had been under Fergie for a long time. So yeah, we can't put this all on Ole, because there is other people there, especially Phelan, who should have a lot of experience, and Carrick's been, you know, a player all the way through, won everything there is to win. So yeah, we've got to say, where's the input coming from these guys over there? And yeah, what do you think about Reece on the whole kind of coaching team issue?
I just think United from top to bottom is just seriously amateurish. I'm going to start with the top. I think we spoke about Ole's appointment. I'm just going to carry on from that point in terms of from the perspective of the board. I thought it was an amateurish way of appointing someone, just because the fans have slightly got a bit more excited, but they should have had the patience and the business foresight and the footballing foresight just to wait until the end of the season. I don't think you'd have seen Real Madrid or Bayern do something as sort of foolish and just going on public sentiment. I just don't think they would have done something like that.
Well, I think Real Madrid would be the exact kind of club to do something like that, whereas maybe not Bayern. I mean, Zidane, he's coming to the job in pretty much the same way and, you know, did well, so has been given the job. So I'm surprised you'd say Real Madrid wouldn't do that. Bayern Munich maybe do things a little bit differently, but I think this is exactly the kind of thing you'd see a club like Real Madrid do.
But the thing what Madrid do is, if they did bring Ole in, they'd have got rid of him way before.
They would have sacked him by now in the season already.
And that's what keeps Real Madrid on the top, because even when they do make silly decisions, because no one's perfect, no one's going to make perfect decisions time in, time out, but it's how you react to having made a wrong decision. And Real Madrid are, I think they're fantastic in the way that, okay, I know a lot of people give them stick because they get rid of managers so quickly, but they're a ruthless club and winning is their number one thing, and they do it well. But
Real Madrid won nothing for a long time, right? Until Ronaldo has come to that club, they'd won nothing for ages.
We say nothing, but in the 90s they've won two Champions Leagues. In the noughties they've won that Champions League in 2001.
There was one Champions League in that time that's kind of saved that whole era. But, you know, even when Mourinho went there, he talks about this was a club that had not even been in the Champions League semi-final for like years and years, despite being the biggest spenders in world football. They're like, you know, Barcelona's were getting dominated them under Guardiola for years. So yeah, we shouldn't say that they're a team that like are so well run, and like, I don't think they're any kind of model for us to be aspiring to whatsoever, to be honest.
I disagree, because they're not the type of team that are going to go 20 years without success. I mean, every team will go through cycles of lack of success, but they're not the sort of club that would have had 30 years of lack of success like we had after Busby. I mean, I just don't see Madrid being that type of club to do that.
Yeah, that's it. But look, there's a whole lot. If we start going into 30 years back then, I mean, at the moment, let's just say we're only 5-6 years in, and it's not a totally barren spell either, because there is a kind of Europa League and whatever in there. But yeah, I know what you're saying. And yeah, I totally actually agree that at the moment, Woodward is a major issue. Glazers, the only thing for me is that I don't think they're going anywhere. I don't know. There isn't anybody out there who I think is going to buy the club. They don't think there's much reason for them to sell. So I just don't even think it's worth talking about. Mm. People always say Glazers out. But it's like, yeah, where are they going to go? Who's going to get them out? Whereas I think Woodward out is a much more realistic possibility.
I think personally, the Glazers have given, I think they've given a lot of money towards the spending on the club. I know recently they've tightened their purse strings, and I don't really agree with them as owners per se in the overall scheme of things, but have they given enough money to managers of Manchester United to make a fist of it and be competitive? I would say yes on the whole, they have. Woodward and
I agree with that. I don't think you can see that we've not spent tons of money. I mean, yeah. We've wasted tons of money, yeah. That's for sure. But there's been plenty spent, especially on the wage bill side. This summer, we didn't spend as much as we needed to. We was looking good until the point that Lukaku, Sanchez went out and nobody else came in. That's really where it kind of fell down. And that's the other thing. We don't know, how much have Ole and Woodward discussed? Has Woodward come to him and said, listen, do you need Sanchez? Are you okay without him? Because it was just coming for the last few days of the transfer window. And even Ole was saying, yeah, if he stays, he's a good player. He's somebody we might need. And we don't know who's making these decisions. That's the only problem. That's why it then becomes difficult on who do you blame? Whose decisions are these down to at the moment? That's the, if Ole has said, listen, I don't need Sanchez, I don't need Lukaku, I'm ready to trust in Gomez, yeah. Chong and Greenwood, then yeah. You say, all right, well, then it's on him then.
Yeah. And then equally, by the same token, if he says, I don't really want, Bruno, I don't think he's quite what we need. I want Sancho, can't have him this year, I'm happy to wait till next year. Who's, is that Ed's decision? Is that Ole's decision? Is that a joint decision? Do the Glazers have any input into that whatsoever? Because I also think, I do think there's a number every year. I think if you look at the books, it's very steady. And I agree with both of you. I do think the amount of money that's put in, whilst you would always want more, you can't really say we have underspent in the transfer market or on wages, particularly when you look at wages, and that we aren't competitive in the market. I think that's not. I know people say for the amount of revenue that we bring in as a club, obviously is the highest grossing club I think in the world and all that kind of stuff, it's maybe not indicative of what we could spend or what we should spend. But I think when you just compare it to everyone else and look that we still lead the way in terms of the amount spent and also the amounts paid out in wages and stuff, I don't think you'd be too disgruntled about that. But it's where we're spending it, who we're spending it on, and how we're making those decisions that I find really interesting. And as you say, Nick, it's probably stuff we'll never, ever really know. But there's always this mixed message that comes out. You hear things like, oh, well, we start looking at players in November during the season. We scout rigorously. We have meetings every third week to discuss players we're going to purchase the next summer. We have 30 scouts look at every single player. We have 20, 30, 40 reports on every single player and all that. And then it gets to the summer. And I know those deals are much more complex than what we see, and that we delve into this transfer culture of needing a story every single day and trusting outlets that should never be trusted. And clearly we have no real honest insight into the workings of the club. But you see teams get it right, you see teams get it wrong, and we seem to consistently get it wrong. Now, this season, the players we've actually brought in, I'd say we've got it right on all three scores. Certainly it looks that way at the moment. I think the jury's slightly out on how good Dan James will really be, but he's certainly not a disappointment by any stretch of the imagination. The other two, I think, will play for us and play well for next 4 or 5 years, no problem whatsoever. But letting those players go, not bringing a player in, big, big risk. And I appreciate if Ole has made that decision, it's a brave one, and I understand where he's coming from. Now, it's egg on his face at the moment during the injury crisis, of course, and he has to just deal with that and come through that. But you do just wonder, how has Ed managed to kind of last 4, 5, 6 years of such, such abject failure? He's the person who's in that position, a conduit between manager and board, and the person who's certainly the face of it all, and the person that we talk about. And again, some of that's going to be media driven, that we're just, getting the same old press. And he is an easy target. He's an easy story. And I think even fans jump on that sometimes because he looks like a bit of an idiot and he says silly things to the press sometimes about what we can do in the market and how much we're going to spend, all that kind of stuff. And he just has this general attitude about him that people really don't like. He's really not a beloved man by any Manchester United fan, I don't think. I think you'd be hard pushed to find someone who is like, always liked him, doing a great job. Thank you very much, Ed. But he has remained, and he'd probably get this big whack of a shirt sponsor, and everyone will be delighted with that in the club as well. Do you know what I mean? And I just think at some point, and this is kind of like what I said about earlier with Ole and the run of fixtures, there's a point I reach where I think at a club like Manchester United, regardless of how it's gone against you, injuries, unlucky, not getting enough time, whatever, but if you have not delivered over such a stretch of time and it's become evident, regardless of what you're trying to do, regardless of what redeeming features there are, I think there is a point where it becomes untenable. I think it becomes such a position of such magnitude, and it's such a big club and so much pressure, that I think as soon as it starts going so far down that slope, it's just not redeemable. And maybe that is slightly knee-jerky, but I just have this like minimum standard for a club like us that I just can't really get over once it gets that bad. And Woodward's been well below that for a long time. He's been in all of these regimes that have all failed and all been poor, and he's clearly been such an integral part of them. So I just don't know. I don't understand. It makes me think that... it does make you think that they don't care, or that the board aren't necessarily motivated by the same things that the fans are motivated. Or maybe we're just not seeing the right side of it, and Woodward, you know, is class. But that's very, very hard to imagine. Do you know what I mean?
No, I mean, if you know, like, some of the histories that Woodward was part of the whole Glazer takeover way back when. So they've obviously put big trust in him. He's always been their kind of right-hand man and hid their man all the way from day one, which is why I guess they're very reluctant to get rid of him. And on the financial side, the club still manages to do well, maybe not amazingly, but they're still making pots of money. You know, even like we can see right now that we've got probably 200 million quid unspent transfer funds sat in the bank. And this is some of the things that a lot of our fans maybe don't realize, that, you know, you can easily go and look at our financial statements and see we've got a load of cash. And the only thing a football club can do with cash is pretty much spend it on transfers. So sometimes people say, oh, we've got no money, you know, the Glazers this and that. And yeah, a lot of it is bullshit, really, because yeah, on that side of things, we don't have a worry. We've got tons of money. And where to, but the issue has always been where it's being spent and who it's being spent on and who's making those decisions, really. But yeah, Woodward stays in the job. And that was the thing I got most kind of happy from last season, when they started talking about restructuring. And this has been the major issue, that it's just not happened. And we don't know why, whether they haven't found the right person, whether there's a whole different plan. You know, there's a story coming out in the last few weeks that, oh, because the summer transfer window went well and the three players have all settled so well, they kind of feel that issues around transfers and all are sorted now. And that maybe they don't need to get some new director of football in. And they've been, you know, promoting somebody else from within in other positions. And yeah, that for me is a worry, because yeah, I did think that that was the major thing that needed to happen after Mourinho left, was a total restructure. And yeah, that's where things just don't seem to be moving forward at all. And yeah, as long as that keeps going on, I don't see how things are going to get better, really.
I mean, to me, if the coaching isn't there, which I don't really think it is at the moment, although it's difficult because the caliber of player clearly isn't up to scratch. But again, coming back to the actual performances on the pitch, the caliber of the player for us, for Manchester United, for top four, isn't there. You know, it shouldn't be 12th, and it shouldn't be abject as it is at the moment. And I don't even, if we were 12th, you know, when Klopp took over Liverpool, he lounged around the bottom of the league for a season and a half sort of things, trying to fix, you know, the departure of Brendan and all that kind of stuff. But there was always, you could always see it. You know, I think even when it was really bad, when Mignolet was like throwing the ball into his own net, Lovren was like smashing it in top bag on goals every other week, you could still see what was happening. You know, you could still buy into it, I think, as a Liverpool fan, or even as someone not connected to Liverpool, looking at it going, ah, crap, I think he's maybe going to be quite good. And we used to jump on the mistakes and the performances and go, ha, 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 they're still Liverpool. He's just crap. Look at his teeth. And then he fixed his teeth, which was the first sign that it was all going to start going very well. But eventually, you know, the football came good. He brought in two or three players, which were the right players. And suddenly, you know, there you go. They look fantastic. Great. But even when they were 12th, 13th, 14th, if I was a Liverpool fan, I'd be looking at it going, do you know what? Like, it's obviously not great. There's some absolute bomb scores in this team. But once they're gone, I think we'll have a shot. And I think I'm impressed at the moment. We brought in Mane. He looks class. I would trust him to go into the next season and do better and better and better. And we've said, you know, at multiple times during this this season so far, it's quite similar to the situation Liverpool were in, except for the fact that I don't see it. And I appreciate there's injuries and I appreciate the squad, whatever. But if you look at that first squad the Klopp took over, oh, it's terrible. It's so bad, the players he was working with, you know, honestly. And none of them are anywhere near that club anymore, or hardly any of them are near that club anymore. And it's gotten so much better. But there was still the style, there was still the intent, there was still the quality of football, even with poor players. And I don't see that with us at the moment, which is my big hang-up with Ole, because I do think the transfers were right. I would give him money in January and trust that he'd spend it well. I would give him money next summer and trust that he'd spend it well. And in some senses, that might make him quite a good man for this transition. It probably just doesn't make him a good man for the year after and the year after and the year after, because I don't think he will imprint any kind of quality football style on Manchester United or on those players that we bring in. But what I will say is, and for me, this is the number one thing for Manchester United at the moment, they just need to spend money. They just need to spend money on good players. Because sometimes I think we overcomplicate things, and coaching is important, and structure is important, and club ethos and motivation, all those things are obviously hugely important. But the baseline will always be the talent, the quality, the motivation of the players, you know, and or it just isn't there, you know, and that's not necessarily all Ole's fault, and he has already taken steps to remedy that. So until we really back whoever the manager is, whether it's Ole or whoever it is, and I think it will take until next summer with proper money and to get the proper players, I just don't see anyone coming in and doing anything more than slightly better. It still won't be that great, you know.
I disagree with just throwing money at the problem, and also the opinion that it's more about player quality than it is the tactical side behind it, because someone like Maguire, we've brought for 80 million. But is he performing like an £80 million defender? No, he's not. I mean, he's solid enough, right? But at the moment, he's operating almost like a £40 million defender based on our style of football. Now, in a correct system, he would probably be showing why he's that highly rated. And there's a lot of players in this United squad who, yeah, okay, quality-wise, individual quality-wise, they're probably not top level. But if you had a sophisticated coach behind them who was, in their mind, was eventually going to get rid of these players, like you mentioned, Klopp was transitioning that squad. But let's just say they were being coached to that level of a Klopp. This team would be comfortably top four or at least top six right now, minimum. And I think the problem with United in the past four appointments has been, first, Moyes, again, dinosaur manager, didn't really have modern day coaching blueprint behind him. Then we appointed Van Gaal, who is a more of a coach type of manager. But the problem is his ideas were almost 20 years out of date. And based on his recent style as a manager, had become very pragmatic and quite negative. Then you bring in Mourinho, who was completely far gone as a manager, way past his best. And again, nothing, completely the antithesis of the modern day get on the ball, everyone needs to pass out from the back type of manager. And now we've brought in an inexperienced manager who doesn't really have any tactical now. So four managers in a row now, we've messed up in terms of not picking a manager who's actually got that modern day tactical blueprint of how to play football. So yes, we can throw more money at the problem, but until we don't get a managerial appointment right, and I put the blame firmly on Woodward on this, we're not going to see any difference. And we're going to keep wasting money. And I think Nick agrees with me in this, that we have spent enough money, but we're not seeing any improvements in performance. So we need to forget about just throwing money at the situation. And I'm glad, yes, we brought three decent players this summer. But look, we brought three decent players. And where are we? We're 12th in the table. So again, that just proves even improving player quality doesn't necessarily improve your performance position.
But that's very straightforward, because our defence hasn't been bad this year. You know, I appreciate what you're saying about Maguire looking better in a better system. I totally agree with basically everything you've said. But I do think, as much as it's not nice to say, an element of it is you just have to throw money on it. And I still would stand by that there's just nowhere near the level of base quality in that squad. Could another manager who's more tactically aware get better out of that squad? 100%, of course they can. Is that what we need in the long run? Totally agree. Is that person available? As we've already discussed, maybe hard to see. But I'm looking at things we can actually impact at the moment, realistically. And I just think the three signs he made were all good, and I appreciate what you're saying, but the defence has not been the problem this year, not by a long shot.
Yeah, I agree with that.
No, I totally agree with that.
So to say, you know, that sort of shows that it's not just about throwing money at it. Well, the converse way to look at that is, look, we spent the money well, we spent the money appropriately, and now we look to have a very solid defence. Unfortunately, the other two thirds of our team are absolutely tragic because we didn't spend any money in those areas.
And it wasn't even that we didn't spend money. We actually lost, you know, Herrera, yeah, Sanchez, Lukaku, even Fellaini. You know, the players who probably would actually improve the team that we had against Newcastle. You know, even as much as whatever some of those players we weren't happy with, I'm pretty sure all four of those players would have started in that Newcastle team ahead of whoever was in that team. So, yeah, that for me is like we did weaken our midfield and forward line. Colm, I'm more with you on that. I don't agree with you, Reece, because like, I do actually think there has been an improvement in the recruiting based on what's happened under Ole. So it is definitely something that's worth being positive about. And yeah, I would be happy to see what kind of player comes in. I mean, I like this idea of bringing in those Premier League proven, British focus on youth, And yeah, it's worked. These three players have been some of our best players this year. And I would like, it's just a shame that, I mean, all right, yeah, maybe we didn't really talk about it. We were linked a lot with Longstaff, whereas it was his younger brother who actually did the business against us. But yeah, he was a player who was linked a lot. There's a few others, the types that I think that we might be looking at is somebody like Madison. Callum Wilson has been mentioned, but I think maybe that's somebody who's more just because that's the only kind of player you can get in a winter window, where I doubt he's somebody that Ole's kind of identified as being the one he really wants. But that's what that's, but that's that that is going to be a problem if we go into this winter window and just panic by now, because we do obviously need players, and who's going to move in that window?
I think, to be clear, what Reese was saying, I completely agree with the analysis of the four managers and why they were pro appointments. I think it's very hard to disagree, particularly with the way it was laid out. I just think we still do need to spend a lot of money. And I think to say that that's not, I think that and the managerial coaching issue are two equal halves of a very big problem. There's other big problems. Do you know what I mean? They're two different parts of a very, very big problem. On the January transfer window, I think we have to go out and spend the January transfer window. We all say, you know, and it's hard to do business in a short window. Players are already committed. Look, we're not playing Champions League football, so we don't need to worry about cup ties or anything like that. I know players aren't necessarily dying to move, but no one can sit and tell me that there's not players out there in world football that want to come to Manchester United and would improve us, you know. Well, there's talk about Mandzukic, talk about Dembele at Lyon, and I'm okay with both of those, but I'm not, you know, I don't think that'll immediately fix our problems. I just think we need bodies. You know, I think that's, and it can be short term at this stage, because I do think there's an element of the season that just needs rescued until next summer, to be honest.
I agree, because if we don't sign players, and sorry, when I was saying we should, like, we need to sort the managerial tactical side out, I'm not saying don't spend at the same time. I'm saying, of course, spend. I'm just saying, in terms of getting the value out of it, pound for pound, you're better off sorting the tactical situation out and then giving that person money to spend, because then that way you're improving players in the squad who you might have thought, let's get rid of them, but they can become good players. And then you're adding quality into a quality system. So you're sort of...
Yeah, I mean, that is supposed to be the whole point in having a director of football, isn't it? That you have somebody who's overseeing recruitment regardless of who's the manager. And that's why we have such a disjointed squad, because we haven't had that kind of person in. So our current squad is the product of five different managers, because we've still got some of Fergie's players in there.
I mean, the thing about a director of football is, and I don't think it's just, it's something that's been talked about, just because there isn't one, I think it's an easy thing to look at and say, well, we need one. And it does seem to, particularly the way continental, I mean, you don't see it as much in the Premier League, but certainly in continental football, it's all the rage and has been for a while.
Most top Premier League clubs nowadays do have some kind of director of football. Yeah.
The problem with it is...
we're like the only exception. And it's because, obviously, you know, it worked so well under Fergie for years without anybody like that they didn't bother changing it. Although, yeah, we did have David Gill even in those days, who you might say was kind of a director of football. That's the difference. Woodward doesn't have that football background or, you know, knowledge, whereas he is just a pure commercial guy, whereas Gill kind of could do a bit of both in those days.
Yeah, agreed.
But did he have that back? You know, I mean, I know David Gill was great and worked alongside Ferguson so well, but equally, this is the point where we kind of talk about things where we don't really know the answers, because we don't know who makes the decisions and who has the most input and all that kind of stuff, you know? And that's not me sticking up for Woodward, because I've made it very clear I don't think he should be at the club. But I just think this kind of thought that, oh, he's bringing this guy who knows football. It's Edwin van der Sar. I actually think that would be a superb appointment. I'd be delighted. Or it's Rio Ferdinand, or it's some guy we've never really heard of, but apparently he knows football, you know? And it's just a kind of a pass-the-buck situation. And that continuity that you think is so good that can come from having someone who sits over the manager can conversely become a problem when, if you are chopping and changing managers, then it's not necessarily that great, because you're basically saying to a manager, you need to come in and respect this person's vision for the club over the next 4 or 5 years. And if you get a manager like Mourinho who comes in and goes, no. And then you get a manager like Ole, completely different style again. You know, so it's, I mean, we're really going away from managers and just looking at coaches, you know, is what Manchester United needs. And to come back to a point earlier, is that Michael Carrick, Kieran McKenna and Phelan came back to raucous applause because it was all going well at that stage. Now that coaching team, you know, comes under fire a lot, I think, and certainly has done in the press, and these sort of weird leaks that come out saying that, you know, players aren't quite happy with the drills and with whatever else, and, you know, how much weight you put into that is up for debate. But you're then going to see maybe a brand new coaching team in next year, brand new coach. And do we become one of these teams that's just going to chop and change every single year? Or do you commit to this team that maybe is struggling at the moment, but, you know, is it going to get better?
I personally think you chop and change until you get it right. That's my philosophy. I don't think you should ever just stick in something for the sake of just... I think that's what United have been doing with this whole back the manager mantra. I mean, that it's got us into a bad situation. We should just... There's nothing wrong in continuously making the wrong appointment until one sticks, and then your cycle of success can begin.
But I just think that's not going to lead us anywhere, to be honest. Because that is what we've been doing. We have been chopping and changing every 2 years.
But we take too long to change. And
but what do we
mean,
2 years? We've changed. Yeah, we've literally
changed.
2 years
is a long time because in...
2 years is not a long time.
It is a long time.
The thing is, how can the manager then have a chance to ever have his team?
I mean, I do think there can be immediate impact that's obvious to see.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, the way Ole started, if he carries on, then of course, you know, it's great. You know, there's no problem there. But then when it does fall apart and he can't, you know, if we have those 10 games and then lose two or three and then he steadies the ship and it all goes good again and players are happy and then we have a good summer window and we start this season well, then you can say, oh yeah, look, that was fine. That was a wee blip. But when you have those 10 games and then it's 10 or 13 or 15 or whatever it was, awful games, and we haven't won away for 25 games or whatever it is, and we can't score more than one goal if we're even lucky enough to score one goal for the next 20 games, then you have to look at that and go, well, does this person need another 20 games to know, you know, is this ever acceptable? You know, fair enough, if he goes on to win the next, you know, if he goes unbeaten now for the next 2 seasons, then of course, yeah, great decision, you stuck with him. But you have to work on the evidence that you have.
Yeah, and the only question for me is, like I say, when we have all these injuries, of course, if we'd had hardly any injuries and we'd had these kind of results, then there's no question that he's obviously failed massively. There's no excuses. But then, you know, the problem is when you go out against Newcastle and six first team players are out, then you kind of say, yeah, well, you know, what? And especially when we kind of all agree that the squad was pretty light in a couple of areas already, then you say, yeah, well, who is to blame then? Is it the recruitment? That's the only place where I still have a bit of difficulty on saying that things are going to be any better by getting rid of Ole. I do agree that there hasn't been enough signs of how he's going to change things. And one thing that actually did massively worry me was his kind of post-match after Newcastle did actually pick out, and maybe one of our editing guys can throw in this quote, but he said something that I thought was slightly bizarre, because he said, we've stuck to the same system, same starting lineup. We're going to make a decision if this is the way to go. 8 games is not a big amount of games, so we'll probably continue as we are. Basically just says to me that he's actually doubting himself now. He's not really sure what he can do himself to make anything better. That's kind of almost the message I got from it.
How are you spending the international break?
Work towards Liverpool. Of course, we've analysed them many a time before, but we need to find a solution to our game, and that's a little tweak in a tactical tweak or whatever. We just because we've stuck to the same principles, same starting lineup system every single game. We just got to make a decision if this is the way to go. 8 games is not a big amount of games, so. We'll probably continue as we are.
I think that's crept in over the last few weeks, because there was one, I don't know if it was, might have been Arsenal, might have been Southampton, I can't remember, but it was a sort of similar rhetoric coming in of him saying, you know, the boys just need to take chances. You know, that should have been a penalty. Maguire should have put that header away, and then, you know, we win this game. And I'm like, it's just not as simple as that. Those were literally the only 2 chances we created in 90 minutes of football, and he's coming away and saying, oh no, that was good. We just need to score those 2 chances, as if that's enough for Manchester United. You know, as if when you're playing small teams...
No, but don't forget as well that he's also trying to keep...
Of course he is.
...squad positive.
Yes.
So, you know, and you can't... You have to remember
of course he is, but
there is
a point where I think, you know, to me it was just so frustrating, and I can understand he's just trying to keep a good brave face on it, but in my mind, sometimes when things are really bad, you just mug yourself off a bit by doing that. You should be able to say, you should be able to have the ability to stand up. He can take it on himself, and that's a good way to protect your squad. He can say, you know, do you know what, maybe I got it wrong, I didn't set the boys up well, that's my fault, and we didn't create enough, we'd work on that, and that's for me to figure out. That's a great way of saying, look, it's not those lads' fault, it's my fault. But he will not say that. He has never said that, you know, because I think he has this, and I have always thought he's very good in pressers and very good at talking, but now when the pressure started to amp up, I think he's just, it's almost a broken record stage where he's just putting on this brave face and saying, no, 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 we have our system. The boys are great in training. I see the work they're doing. I see the effort they're putting in. We gave a lot of good effort.
No, but exactly, that was my worry then. The last game, he wasn't saying that. Yeah. He was actually saying, I'm not actually sure now if this is the system. And especially he was talking about the Liverpool game. You know, we've not talked too much about the fact that, yeah, great job. We've got an easy game coming up next. But yeah, he was asked, are you going to stick with this? Are you going to change tactics? And he basically saying, look, I'm not sure myself what we're going to be doing now and what's the best way to go. He said, we'll probably continue as we are. That was the first point that I actually got worried, because before that, he was, like you say, he was mostly just keeping a brave face on it, saying we're going to keep doing what we're doing.
But even that, that's what I'm saying. Like, even that really bothered me, because when the football is so abject, I don't think that's a realistic. Like, I want a manager to come out and be realistic. Like, that was just so, to me, it was like, I just have to say this and get this interview over with. But it does nothing, you know, and it doesn't give me any confidence that he has any ability to fix that. Because if he's coming out and saying, no, I appreciate what you're saying, he can say it to protect the players. What I'm saying is there's a different way to protect the players. But even when he was coming out with that similar line about, no, this is good, you know, these are the tactics we have, we're working hard on the pitch, I was just going, well, like, how have you just, I've just sat through those 90 minutes, and I know you sat through the 90 minutes because, you know, you were sat there inside of the pitch. There's no way you can come off and say, yep, good stuff, happy off with that, you know. And I know he probably was absolutely fuming, but it gives me no confidence. It gives me zero confidence that he can't just come out and be, you know, disappointed or be angry or be fair, you know, in his critique. And then he has to put on this kind of, you know, we're working hard, the boys had just needed to take their chances. Oh yeah, those two chances we created against Rochdale in 90 minutes of football. Sorry to keep going direct back to Rochdale, but it's just, to me, it was like he wasn't, it just wasn't reality, you know?
Yeah, no, but there has been, and again, it's newspaper rumour, but most reports are saying that he has been going pretty crazy in the dressing room, whereas, you know,
I really,
like you
hope
say,
so.
He's been putting... Yeah. No, that's what most reports are saying, and, you know, you get these leaks and this and whatever. I guess, again, you know, we don't actually know, and we'll never know. But, yeah, apparently that is what's going on, that although he was putting a brave face on it in press conferences and saying, look, I still think we're playing okay and things are going to come, you know, we're going to get our chances, that he was reading the right in the dressing room. Apparently that's kind of what I've heard anyway. As I said, the big change, the big difference was that Newcastle game, where it was really the first time where the message and body language and all did look quite different to me, and I did start getting the feeling that he's now a little bit unsure himself on really where to go from here. Hopefully, you know, it's not the case. He's, you know, he's got this international break now to look at things. I think we've actually got like way less players out on international break than we usually have, which maybe says something about our quality. But also, yeah, a lot of them are actually injured. You know, the likes of Pogba, Martial, Lindelof, I'm sure would normally be playing and are not playing at the moment. And there's still big question marks if they're even are going to be ready for that Liverpool game. I don't know if you've been watching much of the internationals this week. Rhys, have you been seeing any of our players playing this week?
I've been watching England play mostly, so I would have seen Maguire play
Rashford for 20 minutes.
Bit of Rashford for 20 minutes. I thought Maguire, actually, funnily enough, he took his United form into that England performance. Now, I'd been saying that when you watch Maguire play for England, he shows so much confidence on the ball, but he looked exactly like how we're seeing him in the United shirt, which is a bit reserved with the ball. Not quite as super sharp and confident with everything he does. He kind of brought that into the England performance. Not that playing with Michael Keane next to him particularly helps. But yeah, that's what I thought. Rashford, I didn't really see enough of him. Colm, you're probably in a better position to comment on his
performance. He came on at a stage where England were just like huffing and puffing but doing absolutely nothing. He had a few deliveries slung in, but they were quite poor, to be honest. He didn't really get in behind. But at that stage, it was just, you know, a bit of a camp out kind of thing. And then it was just a really poor performance across the board, like, you know. But Rashford is in a real poor spot at the moment. Very, very poor. And, you know, he normally starts for England, and that, I think it was very clear that he really doesn't on current form.
Yeah, he didn't do much over there. I mean, it is worth just giving a quick mention as well to the fact that Dean Henderson was picked in the England squad for the first time. He is still our player over at Sheffield United, and he didn't play, but yeah, he did get in the squad for the first time. I was just having a look around, and yeah, McTominay played today. He didn't play the other day because he was suspended. I think Dan James is the only one who's actually played 290 minutes so far. De Gea was not selected for Spain. They went with Kepa.
Drew 1-1.
Yeah, he didn't do very well, letting a last-minute goal. So yeah,
penalty in Paris. Yeah,
I think some of these, they've still got another game to play yet. So yeah, let's see. De Gea might play that one over there, and England have got another match to come yet. Rojo had half a match against Germany and was taken off at half time. So I don't see any of it. So I don't know whether he was awful or if they were just shuffling the pack or what over there. But yeah, I think that was actually it. Normally when we talk about our internationals, we have like 10, 11, 12 players to kind of report back on. And this time it's literally only been 5 or 6. So yeah, I don't know whether that says something about quality of players or if it's just down to injuries or what really at the moment. But yeah, look, Liverpool is coming up, and obviously on the form book, we've got no chance in this match, but it is the game where kind of the form book does at least go out the window. I'm assuming neither of you are feeling particularly confident as you weren't when we're going against Arsenal, but you kind of hope that maybe if this is the game the players can't get up for, then which is the one really?
Sorry, I was just going to say that I thought Daniel James was, I think, did he pick up a concussion or something? A lot of people were saying he was knocked out cold.
Oh, I missed that actually. Yeah,
I don't know the full story yet. Giggs was saying he was acting. James was kind of agreeing, but other people were saying he was knocked out. So that's a story that's going to be looked at over the next few days, I think. But yeah, back to the Liverpool game. I'm not feeling very confident going into it, to be totally honest with you. Are we playing at home or away?
At home.
Mm-hmm. Well, that does change things. You can always see United somehow pulling out a draw against any team, I think, when it's a big game.
I sort of have a funny feeling like we'll do all right. Liverpool haven't been like super convincing, I don't think, although they're obviously flawless, perfect, all wins. But
yeah, they have had some crazy lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
Even
in the last game, they've sort of huffed and puffed and struggled. They haven't looked super creative. Mo Salah's not been fantastic.
Dean Henderson, in fact, had a total clanger against them.
Yeah,
in his
he did.
Match,
yeah, just dropped it in.
He got through.
I know. Although he's been very good, but. Yeah, so they're not just at their very, very best, but still super creative, super dangerous, very hard to see us not conceding good chances to them. But it's also, I think, the game they need to win to take the outright unbeaten record kind of thing from City. So I think they've gone like 17 games winning, you know, winning every single game or something like that, and that's the record. But if they beat us, they go out on their own, as it were. And when those funny little records come up, I always think the team, you know, it's like, every time we play a crap team, it's like Steve Bruce, you know, has never beaten Manchester United, and then currently we go and play Newcastle and obviously we get spanked. Or, you know, this has never happened at Old Trafford and then it happens, which just seems to be the mood we're in at the moment. But I just think it's kind of the flip of that actually fancy us to get like a wee bit of a result as a two fingers up to Liverpool, and then we'll go and be awful for the next month and a half after. We'll probably get beat by Norwich and whoever we're playing in the Europa League, but be worth it.
It's pretty difficult to really think about how we might do in this game without really knowing who's available. You know, at the moment, big question marks over obviously Pogba, Martial, yeah. Even Lindelof has not played for Sweden, is possibly out.
Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, I think Wan-Bissaka, a red, should be back. Greenwood has pulled out of the England under-21 squad and has not played, so he's apparently injured. I don't know whether it's just precaution and Ole's trying to bring players in or what, but he's not played over there. So, yeah, like I said, until I see what kind of team we have, it's difficult to say anything. You know, it was like going into that Newcastle game when you saw the team sheet, saw how many players were out, then I personally didn't feel particularly confident, even though it was Newcastle, just because, yeah, a lot of our second string are not performing at the moment at all.
It'll be interesting to see if he changes the shape or the tactics at all, because he's been very, very, very firm in this 4-2-3-1, and it has not looked good. Doesn't look like we have the players for it. Doesn't look like we necessarily need the double pivot. Doesn't look like we have a 10 or a right winger, so I don't know why we're so focused on trying to have them. And Rashford just looks so isolated as a number 9 up there, not really leading the line in any way, shape or form. It looks like a formation that just does not suit us. And I appreciate, you know, there's 11 players out on the pitch. It's not just formation that's to blame, but it's a system that doesn't look like it's working for us in any way, shape or form at the moment. Also interesting that England played 4-2-3-1 there in their first qualifier there. Who was that against? Czech Republic. And that was the first time they played that way in like 2 or 3 years, and they looked abysmal. Same, I thought it was very much like watching Manchester United, a lot of the ball and zero creation whatsoever, and a lot of frustrated people out in the pitch, which is what I was reminded of. It literally was like watching Manchester United play, although probably slightly better. So it'll be interesting to see if he changes it, because, you know, Liverpool's a very, very different kettle of fish with their 4-3-3, and the amount of work their wingers or their wing-backs get through, and their midfielders, you know, that kind of three that just are just going to sit, or Fabinho's going to sit, and whether it's Milner, Henderson, and Wijnaldum. And if we are playing Fred and McTominay, or Matic and McTominay, it's probably more likely, if Pogba's out against that midfield, it could be a long day.
I agree with your tactical analysis there, especially in terms of referring to England. I think it's funny watching them two teams parallel is when they play 4-2-3-1, because both their midfields are so lacking in quality, movement off the ball, that intelligence on the ball just to create triangles constantly.
Yeah. Particularly when the ball's at the back four, they just hide behind players and just
pass it out from there.
Yeah.
They just get stuck.
Equally, you've got two people doing one person's job. As soon as it was given to just Declan Rice and Henderson, whoever else, someone was brought on and they were pushed further up the field, suddenly England looks so much better, and it was so simple. You know, it's just not required. Obviously, it works for some players, some setups, but it's not working for us, and I don't think it works for England.
Yeah, I just think those players, both in our squad and in that England squad, in terms of the pivot positions, they're just lacking technical quality and footballing intelligence. So, but when you're playing like 3-5-2, as England did under Southgate, you almost bypass those particular deficiencies because there's an easy outlet, because you've got your wing backs bombing forward and you can always hit the pass out to them. Or you've got two strikers up top, if you hit it to one, he can just hold it up quickly and link up with the other striker. Suddenly you're on the attack.
Yeah, again. It takes the pressure off. When you're playing 4-2-3-1, absolutely, everything has to go through those two eights. And particularly when that's Scott McTominay and Matic, it's just going to be such a long day. And even when they look like they're doing the job okay, what you notice is it's slow. Like the transition of the ball, because they're not demanding it and because they're not whipping it around the place and really making those moves to show for people and create triangles and really getting away from their markers and having that off the ball movement to progress the ball forward. It just doesn't go forward. It goes forward in like a sort of side to side motion and then goes side to side along the box, and then you get countered on, and it's just no good.
Do you think Martial's injuries had a sort of effect there? Because I was hoping at the start of the season with Martial going back as a nine, that you'd see him and Rashford almost as like a York and Cole style two strikers up top, and then we sort of come up with a 3-5-2 and have those two up top with possibly Pogba behind them, something like that. But
I mean, at a base level, Martial just showed at the start of the season how good he is with his back to goal and kind of trapping the ball and having players play off him, which is something that doesn't really get utilised when he's out in the left wing. And then when it is Rashford breaking off the wing to get inside to meet him, everything just looked a lot better in that sense. Although I do think people might be in for a bit of a letdown when Martial does come back, because there's nothing to make a player better like an absence not in the team, particularly when the team's struggling. So when we weren't playing Fred, we were all, and you know, I'm as guilty of this as anyone, we were all gushing about how he was the player that could change us, how about he was the kind of player that would make a difference. And you know, he does whip the, on his left, he whips the ball around nicely, gets it out to the fullback and bypasses certain players and has a good pass on him in that sense. But his touches, his some of his short passing, his control, he's been awful the last few games, awful. And I don't mean to be overly harsh. And I do think when Martial does come back and we see some of the performances, it won't necessarily just be, oh, he's back, it's class, because we're so quick to do that. You know, a player doesn't play for 3 or 4 weeks and his virtues just go up and up and up and up while you're looking at the crap that's on the pitch, and then he comes back and you're like, ah, God, they're all rubbish. Do you know what I mean? Not saying that's the case with Martial, but I just think we might fall into that trap of, you know, thinking he's this holy grail that's going to save the season. It ain't just as good as that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that, because I think Nick mentioned the fact that we've lost all these players and the squad's thin, but we had these players in the squad last season.
Yeah,
performances were still shocking. Yeah, so like I said, that's why I overall think it's the, until the coaching doesn't improve, players, it does, even if you have a half-decent squad, you're just not going to maximise the performance levels and results are going to follow ultimately.
But yeah, on Liverpool, Nick, it ain't going to be good. But I don't think I've ever predicted anything other than a draw or win. I'm going to say we're going to win.
I don't know if any of you saw Mane play for Senegal during the week. That was scary.
Yeah.
No, why? What?
It was probably one of the best international performances I've seen in the past 5 years. He was playing against Brazil, But he absolutely tore shreds out of the likes of Casemiro, Marquinhos. He was up against quality defensive players and he was nutmegging them, doing step poles, absolutely running rings around them. And Neymar was just getting frustrated because he was like, this guy's just showing me up on the pitch. So my fear is if Mane brings that level of performance, and he has been in the goals as well for Liverpool, he's going to be the one to watch, not necessarily Salah, who we usually lock off quite well.
Yeah.
But Mane's the one I'm really scared of. He could lead Liverpool to victory.
Yeah, Mane has actually been kind of usurping Salah this season for sure. And like, in fact, it was only
he got injured last season. Yeah.
Well, he got injured last season, even last season, because I'm always unfortunately having to have at least one of these players in my fantasy team.
Yeah, I've got Mane.
So yeah, I did actually save the money and get rid of Salah and went to Mane. Have you got any United players in your fantasy team at the moment, Cole?
Nick, I always start out with all the Manchester United players, three of them always, and then I wonder halfway through the season why I'm not that good at fantasy football. And every time I go, this is Rashford's year, 20 goals this year minimum. Oh, he's going to be class. Stick him in, captain him. I've had Wan-Bissaka in since the start, and he's been. It's not that he's been bad; we've been bad. So yeah, I don't have any of them. I'm all City and Liverpool. It's a hard game. Fantasy football makes me hate myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I did actually start the season with Wan-Bissaka, Rashford. I think I even bought in James.
Dan Diaz was good value there for a minute at 6 million when he was in the goals.
I've just played my wild card and got rid of all three of them. So yeah, I'm actually now without any United players in my fantasy team at the moment.
Yeah, you know it's bad when you're going for Pookie over Rashford. Like, what's that about?
I just don't have the patience for fantasy football in the sense that I just end up keep transferring my team every bloody week.
Yeah, exactly. Cost you loads of points. Yeah, exactly.
So I give up after the first month.
I mean, like 95% players give it about 3 weeks and then give up, and then it's the two same fellas at the top of the league going hard at it for the rest of the year. So.
Oh, no, we have big competition in ours because we all throw a bit of money into it, so it keeps everybody interested all year. Yeah, yeah. Just, I think it was about 15 mates of mine in a league with throwing like 20 quid. So, yeah, everybody keeps it serious business, basically. Yeah, exactly. Even that, any bit of money keeps everybody interested. But yeah, look, anyway, like I say, it's difficult to make much comment about this Liverpool game before we see who's actually available. And if we're down at that kind of bare bones squad, then you just hope they can defend a bit there and see what we hit on the break. I mean, yeah, as I say, Colm, I think that will actually be the most interesting thing, especially given those comments from Ole where he was talking about, let's see whether we stick with or change things, how we actually go tactically into this game. You know, we've talked a lot about whether Ole has the tactical nous to change things, and this will be the first kind of test. I mean, so far we've just seen him sticking with the same thing every game, week in, week out, and let's see what he does over this. And I think it'll be very interesting. That for me will be the main thing to see from there. And as they say, like, this game, wherever the two teams are at, when Liverpool were struggling, we were better, they always turned up. Where you really hope that, yeah, we should as well, especially at home. And the one actually positive, as did mention on the last pod, and again, want to give a shout out to these Red Army guys who are really getting the atmosphere going at Old Trafford, even in whenever it's Astana and Rochdale and whatever. So yeah, Liverpool is never a worry for atmosphere anyhow. So yeah, that for you sure, the fans will be up for it, and just let's hope the players can deliver something for the fans to be happy about at least. But yeah, say there's still another like nearly week or so to see who comes back from there. After that, we've got Europa League again. And then, yeah, I think we're away at Norwich.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's see what our run goes from there. But yeah, we're going to need still early days. We're only 8 matches in. I know people are like, obviously it has been our worst start to the season for a long time, not had that away win. You know, I'm getting these stats thrown at me in various WhatsApp groups from all the opposition fans I know on a daily basis at the moment. So yeah, it's not a fun time being a United fan, but I think we have to stick with what we're at, even though we're not, I know we're all at slightly different places, but I think we're all saying that it's not really the time to be changing the manager. And let's see if we can get to that winter window, bringing a couple of reinforcements. Yeah. And
that's what I'm saying, and then criticizing Ole heavily for an hour and 20 minutes. But yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But yeah, it's also, I think we all agree, I think all three of us agree that there is bigger issues out there than the manager. And until those things are addressed, then just constantly chopping and changing the manager is going to lead nowhere. And that, yeah, for me, that's the big kind of message. That, and especially, yeah, at least the recruitment this summer has started well. There's been some kind of start of a rebuild. And the only question is whether the club give this manager time to rebuild it in his own way, or whether, yeah, somebody else has to come in and then you start from square one again. That's the only problem for me. If you just keep going back to square one, where does it ever go? And you just end up in that constant like circle. And you know, you said, Colm, at the start that you start getting this feeling of deja vu. Mm. And when you lose these matches now, it doesn't have the same feeling as losing like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, because you just kind of get used to it a little bit, unfortunately. And yeah, we just need to get out of this rut one way or another. Anyway, I think that's probably enough from all of us. Like I say, not the most positive podcast, but yeah, things are not great at the moment. Whether Liverpool is going to be the match to turn things around, we're not too sure either. But yeah, we'll certainly be back after that game to report and see how we feel there. So yeah, good night from me.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.